Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. We're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. And at 6 o'clock with your morning drive is the great Steve Cochran. All coming up right here on WGN. And as you heard, that is the theme for the Monday morning movie reviews. And that means that every Monday morning, Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, and more, join me to talk about all the new movies. And we're going to review all the new movies and more. It is Monday morning, and that means my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. That's coming up later. We'll have a Blackhawks Express from last night's victory. And we're going to talk about some bad food ideas. We got some food talk that we're going to be talking about a little bit later on. But we got to get to the movie reviews. Colin and Eric join me every week, and we talk about the new movies and more. Let me say hello to Eric Childress. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin Suter. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. Before we jump into the new stuff, there are a couple of quick things I want to catch up on. Last week, Eric, you reviewed the movie The Eyes of My Mother.
Yes.
I caught up with it, and I was blown away by it. I thought it was amazing. And I was really – now, Colin, you've seen it.
Yes.
Now, I don't – I mean, I thought it was a pretty astonishing movie. It really snuck up on me. I didn't expect it to be what it turned out to be, and I really highly recommend it. Again, it's not for everybody, as you said, Eric.
No.
Clearly not for everybody, but I don't know. I was really, really, really deeply moved by it. Much more so than I thought I would. The reaction I had to the film was quite different than what I thought I was going to have. And I was sort of like this combination, as I said before, or as I've texted you guys before. It's like this weird, beautiful film that is kind of a combination in spirit of Butcher Boy and May. In that regard, I don't know. Would you guys agree with that?
Story. Yeah, I can see where you're going with that.
Yeah,
that's certainly one way to look at it. Moved is certainly nothing. Is not how I would.
Oh man, I was
my reaction to it.
Seriously, I was really like deeply moved by it. In a very strange. Sort of horrifying way, but I thought it was, I mean, I really, and the idea that it was shot in black and white and it's really beautifully, I thought the acting was terrific. So The Eyes of My Mother, again, it's not for everybody. It's a very bizarre, it's only 75 minutes long too. So
Yeah. You're
in, you're out. It's a very, very bizarre movie. It's shot in black and white. It takes place over the course of many years. It's just, if you're not in the mood for something really, really bizarre and violent and strange, then don't see it. But if you want to take a chance on, you know, on seeing something really, I think, challenging and pretty unsettling, and I think great. So that's the other one. Now, Colin, last week when we were talking about Christmas movies, Colin mentioned Christmas Evil. And after your description, Colin, and your review,
yeah,
I ordered it on Amazon.
Okay.
And I've watched it, and I can't even explain. I don't even. Eric, have you seen this movie?
Yeah.
I don't even, because
of Colin.
I don't even know what. I swear to God, I don't even. I can't even explain it. It's insane. It is an absolutely insane movie, but like really compelling, really compelling and weird. And I was with it by the time the whole thing just goes haywire during the last 10 minutes. Again, tell everybody what this movie's about, Colin. Christmas Evil is also known as You Better Watch Out, as the director calls it.
Right.
Yeah. So you talked about this last week.
Yeah. So this is about a guy who lives alone. He works at a toy factory, and he really wants to be Santa Claus. He is kind of psychotic about it.
Yeah, the movie opens with him having a little episode at the beginning involving.
It's like Pee-wee's Big Adventure, like the way he starts his day, the same way Pee-wee Herman starts his day. Only this is like, instead of Pee-wee Herman, it's Travis Bickle.
Yeah,
and I think that's kind of how I described it last week.
Yeah.
And there's kind of a fantasy element to this film. There's kind of there's certainly a horror element to it. But it's not quite, I wouldn't say it's a slasher film. It's more psychological than that, but the movie's psychology is kind of warped and twisted. But yeah, I mean, it is kind of a hard movie to describe.
It is, yeah.
I discovered it when I had Comcast a few years ago, and they had, you know, their free movie section. You could just punch up any movie that they had listed
right.
on there.
Right.
And that was one of them. And I was like, all right, oh, I'm about to go to bed. I'm just going to put this on for a few minutes. And let's see what's going on here. Christmas Evil. I have no idea what this is. And I clicked on it, and I stayed up for the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was really, like you said, very compelling. And by the end, I was like, what?
Yeah.
What sick, twisted mind came up with this film? It's kind of brilliant.
Yeah, it is. And I'm going to watch it again because one of the audio tracks is John Waters. Now, have you listened to that audio track, Alan?
Yeah, it's very entertaining.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a must listen,
okay.
Definitely.
And that should explain to people the quote on the front of the CD, the quote on the front of the DVD is, "The greatest Christmas movie ever made, John Waters."
Yeah.
So I think that kind of sums up the kind of movie we're talking about. If John Waters thinks it's the greatest Christmas movie ever made, then you know we're in a different territory.
I think it's him and the director.
It is, yeah.
Commentary. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. But also the other piece of trivia that you posted about the guy who plays the lead in it, the guy who plays Harry, the lead, is Fiona Apple's dad.
Yes.
Now that's another piece of trivia that just blows my mind. Like, what? How could this movie get weirder? Oh yeah, that's Fiona Apple's dad.
I know.
God, it's quite a discovery. I got to tell you, it is. It's pretty amazing. So that's Christmas Evil. Again, if you're in a particular mood. So
yeah.
All right. Before we get to the new movies, Eric, the Chicago Film Critic Association has announced its nominations.
Yes.
For the 2016 Film Awards. Well, why don't we talk about that, Eric? Tell everybody about the nominations.
Oh, well, where would we like to begin? It's quite a list.
Yeah, it is quite a list. And so this is the 27th year.
Yeah.
wow, I'm old. There are a ton of categories. Why don't we start out with we'll go backwards and lead up to Best Picture.
Okay.
Most Promising Performer. Let's go through that one.
Okay, the nominees for Most Promising Performer are Lily Gladstone for Certain Women, Lucas Hedges for Manchester by the Sea, Royalty Hightower for The Fitz, Janelle Monáe for Hidden Figures and Moonlight, and Trevante Rhodes for Moonlight.
Okay, Most Promising Filmmaker
is Kelly Fremon Craig for The Edge of 17, Robert Eggers for The Witch, Anna Rose Holmer for The Fitz, Travis Knight for Kubo and the Two Strings, and Trey Edward Schultz for Krisha.
Okay. Colin, you got the list in front of you, too?
Yeah. I think the Most Promising Filmmaker, I think that's everybody on my ballot. I was like, I think I had a perfect ballot for that one.
Oh, is that right?
I think.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's
I got
right.
three. Yeah. I had three out of the five on that one. Okay. Colin, why don't you give us the original score?
Original score, Arrival by Johan Johansson, Jackie by Mika Levy, La La Land by Justin Hurwitz, Moonlight by Nicholas Britell, and The Neon Demon by Cliff Martinez.
Okay. And for editing?
And, camera person, Nels Bangerter, Jackie Sebastian Sepulveda, La La Land by Tim Cross, Manchester by the Sea by Jennifer Lame, and Moonlight, Joey McMillan and Nate Sanders. Maybe we should just mention the films.
Yeah.
For these categories.
Right. Okay. Eric, why don't you go with cinematography?
Cinematography, The Handmaiden, Jackie, La La Land, Moonlight, and Silence.
And for Eric, art direction, production design?
For art direction, production design, we have The Handmaiden, Jackie, La La Land, The Neon Demon, and The Witch.
Okay. Foreign language film, Colin.
All right. Ellie, The Handmaiden, Julieta, Neruda, and Tony Erdman.
Okay. And best documentary, Colin?
Camera Person, Life Animated, OJ Made in America, yes, the miniseries, Tower, and Wiener.
Uh-huh. And Eric, animated feature?
Best Animated Feature, Kubo and the Two Strings, Moana, The Red Turtle, Tower, and Zootopia.
And Adapted Screenplay, Eric?
Adapted Screenplay, Arrival, Ellie, The Handmaiden, Love and Friendship, and Silence.
And for Colin, original screenplay?
Hell or High Water, Jackie, The Lobster, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight.
Okay. Supporting actress, Colin.
All right. Viola Davis for Fences, Lily Gladstone for Certain Women, Naomi Harris for Moonlight, Janelle Monáe for Hidden Figures, and Michelle Williams for Manchester by the Sea.
Okay. All right, Eric, Best Supporting Actor?
Best Supporting Actor, Mahershala Ali for Moonlight, Alden Ehrenreich for Hail Caesar, Ben Foster for Hell or High Water, Lucas Hedges for Manchester by the Sea, Trevante Rhodes for Moonlight, and Michael Shannon for Nocturnal Animals.
Okay. Actress, Colin?
Amy Adams for Arrival, Rebecca Hall for Christine, Isabelle Huppert for Elle, Natalie Portman for Jackie, and Emma Stone for La La Land.
Best Actor, Eric?
Casey Affleck, Manchester by the Sea, Adam Driver for Patterson, Joel Edgerton for Loving, Colin Farrell for The Lobster, and Denzel Washington for Fences.
And Best Director, Colin?
Damien Chazelle for La La Land, Barry Jenkins for Moonlight, Pablo Larraine for Jackie, Kenneth Lonergan for Manchester by the Sea, and Chan Wook Park for The Handmaiden.
And Eric, Best Picture.
Best Picture, The Handmaiden, Jackie, La La Land, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight.
Okay. All right. And we are voting now in the finals. When do the winners get announced?
At our awards dinner Thursday evening.
Okay. This Thursday, the awards dinner. And where's that at?
It is going to be at Zia's off of North Ashland. That's where we'll be gathered together to have some great food and announce the winners. And we'll be tweeting about it, and the press release will be released later on.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a great time, as it has in the last 3 years, doing this this dinner.
Okay, cool. All right, and we're going to link up the nominations on our Facebook page so people can check out the entire list if they missed it. And we can check it out on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. All right. Guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, we'll talk about all the new movies, and Eric and I will also, a little bit later on, talk about the box office right here on 720 WGN. Right now, though, it's time for the news. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hi. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Our phone number and text number, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/NickDShow. Follow us on Twitter at NickDShow. Okay, time to review the new movies. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every week. And hey, guys, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hey, next week is our last movie reviews before the end of the year, because I'm taking a couple of weeks off for the holidays. And you guys are going to come down live in studio, and we're going to talk about Rogue One. I mean, there are other movies being released that day, but obviously that's the big one. And I don't know if I've been reading really great stuff about it, Eric. Have you heard?
Yeah, the big Hollywood premiere was last night, and
yeah.
Those who got a chance to see it are really saying some really positive things about it.
My two favorite reactions were Kevin Smith, who lost his mind over it, and Chris Hardwick, who also lost his mind. And those are two of the biggest geeks on the planet.
I heard Hardwick talk about it on Talking Dead tonight a little bit.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited about it, man. I got to tell you, I really am. I like the director a lot, and I'm looking forward to it. So there you go. And do they have – who's playing Peter Cushing? I mean, he's in it, right?
Ben Mendelsohn, is he playing the young Moff Tarkin?
Is he? I don't know. I just
that seems to make most sense.
Yeah, I don't know whoever they got for Sith who looked exactly like him, unless that was CGI. I don't know, but that the dude whoever played him in the last scenes of Sith looked frighteningly like Peter Cushing.
Yeah, right.
Like exactly like him. So anyway, all right. So you guys will be down live in studio, and we'll do that. And for those people who are wondering when we're going to do our year end, it'll be January 9th. when we do the year-end whole thing with the subcategories and the best of and the worst and all that cool stuff. So some stuff coming up. All right, Colin, why don't we start it off with Fire at Sea for this week?
All right. Well, this is a documentary that depicts two stories that are part of the same bigger story, and that's the immigration crisis on this Italian island of Lampedusa. One part of the documentary follows a boy and his best friend. They kind of play on the island. They go to school together. They live this kind of typical childhood, somewhat oblivious in a way to the world that's changing around them. You know, they play with their slingshots. They play war games and such. Meanwhile, the film also depicts thousands of men and women and children who are coming ashore to this island, which has become a sanctuary for African refugees escaping their homeland by raft or by boat or wherever they can. And we see the rescues, the immigration process, and the body count that adds up on a daily basis. So you got these two like narratives going on at the same time, and it makes a very effective way of communicating to the audience the world that can be happening around you that you're not even aware of, or that you're just kind of either blissfully unaware of, or you just, you know, it just doesn't affect you that much. But the point of the movie really is about the refugees. It's not solely about that. It's just kind of I think it's kind of an interesting way of approaching a documentary narrative. You know, the movie doesn't go out of its way to comment on itself or comment on forcing the audience to feel one way or another about anything. It's just this kind of beautiful, tragic, scary vision of mass migration to another country could look like on a small scale and on a large scale. This is a film that directed by Gianfranco Rossi, and ignorant of the rest of his work. I think he's made like a few short documentaries and a couple features, and this is the first one I've seen of his, but I'm curious to see more just because I find this approach really interesting and something I haven't seen that much of. So I definitely recommend it if you can. I forgot to look up where it was playing.
I'll have to look it up. I don't have it here either, yeah.
Okay, but definitely I do recommend it.
Okay, that's Fire at Sea. Okay, all right. Eric, I didn't get a chance to see this one, but you guys both did, and it's interesting because we talked about a movie with the same subject almost a couple of weeks ago. So tell us about Kate Plays Christine.
Yeah, there were two films that premiered at Sundance this year about the television journalist Christine Chubbuck, who infamously killed herself on air. The film that Rebecca Hall just got a CFCA nomination for is just called Christine. But this is a documentary that features the actress Caitlin Scheel. She's been on a lot of television shows recently. She was sort of part of the Joe Swanberg family of filmmakers, an indie actress that you probably recognize from some stuff. And in this film, she is hired by a film that's being made to portray Christine Chubbuck. And so this movie documents her own journey for the truth about who this woman was. There isn't a lot of sort of available footage, certainly not of the actual incident. So she goes and she talks to people that knew her. She goes to places that she went, the gun store where she actually bought the gun. And it becomes this really fascinating insight, not even so much about Christine Chubbuck herself, because a lot of that stuff still is kind of shrouded in mystery as to exactly why she did it, but the sort of the responsibility of an artist such as Caitlin Scheel is in portraying the truth, and whether or not how close she should be coming as an actress to sort of uncovering this mystery. Is it a responsibility to the truth, or is it a responsibility to the art? And her own sort of journey as to whether or not it's actually even right to even do a movie about the subject matter, about this woman, when we know so little about her. And all leads up to one of the most riveting scenes that I've seen in a movie all year, where she actually has to go through and act out the actual scene where she did kill herself on air. I think this is a fascinating piece of work, one of the best documentaries of the year. Again, a really just fascinating portrait of not just movie making, but particularly acting, and what actors have to go through when they're really trying to sort of delineate that sort of line between the truth and art. I think Caitlin Scheele actually gives one of the best performances of the year. I think of the two performances, I'd actually choose her over Rebecca Hall, even though she's basically playing herself and a version of Christine Chubbuck. I think this is a tremendous film that should be seen.
Okay. Colin, what about you?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I agree with the assessment that this is a much more interesting film than the one we reviewed a couple weeks ago, which I didn't see at the time, but I've since caught up with. Yeah, this is again another documentary that kind of breaks the form with its approach towards the subject. And when that happens, it's so refreshing, because there's so many ways to just make a straightforward documentary that, you know, everybody makes. And you know, I think both of these films are really just examples of a filmmaker that kind of gets out of that rut and really strives for something interesting. This is a really fascinating journey to be on. And it kind of goes somewhere very unexpected at the end. And I don't know if I would have had the same experience if I hadn't already seen the straightforward narrative film. I don't remember. Eric, which one did you see first?
I actually saw the documentary first.
Okay. Yeah, so I saw the other one first. But it's still an interesting it's an interesting experience either way, I think. And for Fire at Sea, is playing at the Siskel Center all week. Kate Plays Christine is also playing at the Siskel Center. It looks like on and off. It's playing tonight at 7:45, and then I don't know when it plays next, but it was playing over the weekend.
Okay, but both of them are at the Siskel Center then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's Kate Plays Christine, and the other documentary that was reviewed here is Fire at Sea, and that's both of them are playing at the Siskel Center. Okay. Colin, tell us about Miss Sloan.
Well, this stars Jessica Chastain as one of the most powerful lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and she has a reputation for winning every battle by always being, you know, two steps ahead of her opponents. And she gets hired by gun control lobbyists, which kind of goes against the firm that she's working for. So she takes a few of her employees and goes at it alone. And then we get to see why she has the reputation she has, as she goes against the Second Amendment activists out there. John Lithgow plays a congressman who sits in judgment at her trial, which is the film kind of goes back and forth between the trial and what led her to the trial. And Mark Strong plays a man who hires her and is her closest ally. My future ex-wife, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, plays a woman who has been affected by guns in her life and knows all the statistics, which becomes important in Miss Sloan's lobbying efforts. But then she becomes a media prop in the process. So this is basically, you know, a thriller, you know, with political intrigue. Jessica Chastain, you know, really owns this role and really, you know, makes the most of it. You can tell she's kind of having a ball with it. I mean, and not playing it campy or anything like that, or over the top, just like really sinking her teeth into it, and really just running with it in a really great way. So she makes the film very watchable, and I think Gugu Mbatha-Raw is wonderful as well, and the scenes between them I think are really make the movie work when it wants to work, when it works well. there is a kind of, you know, almost a guilty pleasure aspect to the film in a way, because I think if you can imagine the most absurd episode of House of Cards, this movie is even more absurd than that at the end, to the point where I almost can't recommend the movie because I think it falls apart. I mean, I think the final outcome of the film is just kind of too ridiculous to take seriously. I felt like the movie was trying to pull me in two different directions in a way. You know, you get the psychological study of this character, which is not, the movie doesn't tell you that much about her past, which I think is kind of a good thing. Because it, you know, it doesn't try too hard to wrap everything up nicely so the viewer understands where this character is coming from. But at the same time, it wants to be taken very seriously as a thriller. And yet it's, by the end, I was kind of laughing at the end when I don't think I was supposed to be. Just the way the tone of the movie, the way the movie is set up, was just kind of at odds with this absurd ending. So, you know, I can see, you know, why people would enjoy this film. And like I said, I'm a kind of guilty pleasure level, and it's, there's kind of a, almost a tawdriness to it, you know, that makes it, it's very watchable. The actors on the screen are all very good, and, you know, there's a lot of scenery chewing, and the you know, the screenplay is kind of over the top. It's a very watchable and on the surface level enjoyable film, but when you break it down, it just kind of doesn't make sense or add up too much. Okay. So I'm not really recommending it, but you know, you could do worse, I guess.
Okay. All right, that's Miss Sloan, and it's playing at a ton of theaters across the city and the suburbs. Okay, hang on, guys. We got to take a break. Eric Childress, Colin Suter are with me, and we're reviewing the new movies. We've got more movies to talk about. Plus, Eric and I will break down the box office for this week as well, right here on 720 WGN. We'll be back. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Welcome back to the show. Hi. Yeah, we're reviewing the new movies. It's the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Studer from efilmcritic.com and rogerebert.com and more are here to review the new movies. And welcome back, Eric, and welcome back, Colin.
Thank you.
Hello.
All right. Eric,
yeah.
Tell us about Office Christmas Party.
Okay. Well, this is a story set in Chicago. There is an office that has been left to T.J. Miller. His father owned the business and passed away and left him in charge, even though he's not exactly Mr. Responsible with driving up the profit margin. That is mostly left to his older sister, played by Jennifer Aniston, who is more hard-nosed and not really crazy about how he's handling his branch. His best friend is played by Jason Bateman. And the two of them decide that there's one way to save this company that his sister is now planning to shut down, and a way to save all the people's jobs, all the people that he cares about in the office, and that they're going to turn this small little Christmas party they're having into this grand event, hopefully to woo this client played by Courtney B. Vance. So that's pretty much all there is as far as plot's concerned. Is the office Christmas party then begins to spiral out of control as they try to bring in this client, and things get wacky and wackier and wackier. So a lot of very big names in a movie that was directed by Josh Gordon and Will Speck, I think are their names, the director's names.
Yep.
They have done previously in the past Blades of Glory and The Switch, two comedies that I actually enjoy. I actually like both of those movies. This movie is an embarrassing mess. So much so that I even forgot to mention Kate McKinnon. That's how much I've already forgotten about this movie. this is a movie where as you're watching it and you see this cast involved, and it just appears from the very get-go that they got the cast together but then forgot to write a screenplay. Jason Bateman, you know, I love the guy, but he settles into the shtick sometimes, and he's just doing the same old thing that we see him do all the time. T.J. Miller, who I've only really liked on Silicon Valley. You know, Kate McKinnon, God knows she's trying, but, you know, this is the second movie this year I've seen her where a character trait of hers is farting. And it just seems like that's not a great use of a true comic talent like her. Olivia Munn gets nothing to do except to factor into the climax, pretty much, that comes down to writing a code, you know, because that's what everyone's going to see this movie for. They're the two best jokes, the two biggest laughs in the entire movie are directed at Chicago sports teams. and you know, the one involving Rob Corddry, that's just so off the cuff, it made me laugh, and another one involving T.J. Miller talking about the Bears. And I don't know exactly how that's going to play outside of Chicago. So you get two really good Chicago sports jokes, and pretty much nothing else in this movie. I was embarrassed for a lot of the cast involved because it's just the direction is completely off. There is no direction. It wants to be sort of a Christmas office party version of The Hangover, but it doesn't have the guts to be as raunchy or as ridiculous. The Switch and Blaze of Glory were both PG-13. Seemed like, let's try an R-rated movie and we'll see how it works out. Well, it didn't. So I can't recommend this movie in the slightest.
Yeah, I was massively disappointed. I was really looking forward to it because of the cast. You know, I mean, if you look at this cast, I mean, the only way to screw it up is what they did.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. It's like they got the cast and then went, oh, yeah, oh, no. Who wrote this? Extraordinarily talented people, all pretty much wasted. I laughed a few times during the movie. It's not particularly. I mean, there's really nothing to this film. As you mentioned, it's a mess, and it's an absolute mess. There's no structure whatsoever. The jokes are inconsistent. The characters are inconsistent as well. Like motivations change for the sake of a joke, which is easy to do if you don't have a three-dimensional character that can change on a dime. I like T.J. Miller, I believe, more than you do. I love him on Silicon Valley. He's great on Silicon Valley. But I've liked him in other stuff, too. Here he just comes off as, you know, brash and annoying. And you're right, Jason Bateman is doing the Jason Bateman thing. And he's good at it, but it's like there was no effort involved. And is Jennifer Aniston, is her thing now just to continue to do these kind of comedies? And with Bateman? I'm surprised Sudeikis wasn't in this movie.
Yeah, seriously. Well, both of them were in The Switch.
Right, yeah.
Together, and obviously the Horrible Bosses movies.
Right. She's doing stuff like We're the Millers, and, you know, like, so it's, this is kind of like what she's gotten herself into now, you know? And some of them are good, you know, and some of the comedies that she does are good. Well, the second Horrible Bosses wasn't good, but the first one is great.
First one's good. Were the Millers is pretty funny.
Yeah, Were the Millers has some laughs in it, and she's good. There's no question about it. Well, everybody in this movie is good elsewhere.
Right.
And yeah, it's really painful to watch what, you know, how so many people are wasted in this movie. And all you got to do is turn on SNL consistently every Saturday to watch Kate McKinnon work.
Yeah,
she's a national treasure, as far as I'm concerned.
Give you something,
but you know, so if you think, Kate McKinnon is in this, don't bother to spend your $12. Stay home and watch SNL because she kills on that show every week.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, not funny at all. A waste of time and a massive waste of talent. So I agree with you 100%, Eric.
Great.
All right, hang on, guys. We got to take a break here. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, we've got one more big movie to talk about, and that's Jackie. With Natalie Portman, and then we'll talk about box office right here on 720 WGN, so stick around. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio. Seventh floor of the Trip Tower. We're here till 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. Yes, as you hear the themes, this is the movie review segment. We talk about the Monday morning movie reviews. We've got one more big movie to review here. We'll preview next week's movie, and we will talk about the box office all coming up. Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me, and we welcome them back to the show. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, you.
Hello.
All right, Colin, tell us about Jackie.
All right. Well, this is the biopic of Jackie Kennedy, and it stars Natalie Portman as Jackie Kennedy, and the film does not take the usual biopic structure. It takes place primarily before, during, and after the assassination of JFK. And it jumps around in time as we go from a biographer, I think it's a biographer or a journalist, interviewing Jackie at her home, her days in the White House, and how she kind of, you know, transformed it. into something else and made it her own and sort of changed the role of First Lady as Americans knew it. It goes to the assassination and the aftermath and how she had to cope with not just the loss of her husband, but the role of grieving in front of the whole country and, you know, and then the whole world and the effect that that had on her and how she dealt with it and how she dealt with the funeral and the procession and, you know, what was appropriate. You know, the movie kind of just takes us behind the scenes, what went on that day and the days that followed. I think by jumping around in time, I think the movie really effectively just sort of conveys the sort of state of confusion and state of sadness in both Jackie and the country, kind of trying to put the pieces together of what just happened. And also just, you know, she's always been kind of an enigmatic figure in American history. And, you know, and this film kind of sort of lays out why that is. I think Portman is amazing in this film. She's not doing just, you know, an imitation. She is creating, it's almost like she's creating this character from scratch, really turning it into something really organic. And you're not really watching, you know, a typical biopic performance here. This is more interesting. You got Peter Sarsgaard as Bobby Kennedy. He's very good. You know, John Hurt as a priest. Billy Crudup as the journalist. It's a really top-notch cast throughout this whole, in this thing. It's directed by Pablo Larraín, who actually is, you know, Jackie is one of our top five Best Picture nominees. He also directed one of our foreign nominees called Neruda, which I confess I have not seen yet. I'm going to definitely watch it this week now that it's been nominated. But this is a really interesting director. He made a film called No a few years ago that I really liked. This guy has got a really interesting vision and definitely takes the biopic to, you know, another level with this movie. So this comes highly recommended. Definitely go see this one.
Okay. All right. Eric?
Yeah, well, I've been raving about this film ever since we talked about it at the Toronto Film Festival this year, where it was certainly the biggest surprise, the film that kind of came out of nowhere. And like Colin said, it's not a traditional biopic. And this is a movie that Portman just completely owns. She owns this role after a certain amount of time. And this movie is not incredibly long. It's only like 99 minutes or something like that. And at some point, you forget you're watching Natalie Portman. You feel like you are watching Jackie Kennedy. And, you know, I mean, you know, even though I'm kind of a student of this period, particularly around the JFK assassination, I didn't know that much about Jackie, other than, you know, just a few things that I had heard and, you know, read a few things. But mostly whenever people talk about her, they talk about her elegance and they talk about her fashion sense and these kind of things, almost kind of condescending kind of things, that she was, you know, she was this stately woman and this honorable woman, but you don't really get a sense of just how stately and honorable she is until you see this film, I think. You know, maybe some people knew more about her than I did, but this film sort of cemented the fact. As you sort of watch this kind of transition as they go, you know, this movie is kind of beautifully edited between the past and the present of the movie and the future and stuff, where there's a portion of the movie where they recreate the tour of the White House that she did that was broadcast on television. And you see the, you know, this woman that she, you know, she was then, to how she has to be and sort of juggle all these balls in the wake of her husband being assassinated, and how she had to put up an image for the press. She had to put up an image for her children and for the politicians around her, to plan the funeral arrangements, to, you know, to talk to the press, to maintain legacy, not just her own, but her husband's. And you see the conversations that she has with this priest played by John Hurt, which is some of my favorite scenes in the movie. And the way she handles the journalist later on, played by Billy Crudup, and the way she handles the politicians around her and trying to get the details of the funeral right. This is a remarkable film, a remarkable way to tell this story, and I think it's one of the best movies of the year.
Yeah, it's great. It's really, really great. And it's not for people who... I want to emphasize, this is a very original way to tell the story. You know, there have been biopics about her in the past. There have been made for TV movies. There was the film that was about her relationship with Onassis, called The Greek Tycoon, which came out in the 70s. And again, we all have these preconceived notions of what we think Jackie Kennedy was. But this is just it's a very unique way to tell the story. It is so not standard biopic by any stretch of the imagination. And Natalie Portman is astounding in it. It is a great performance. And I think she's a lock to win. I mean, I know there were a lot of great female performances this year, but this is just like tailor-made, you know. I mean, and she's extraordinary. And I mean, and there's been enough time, Eric, wouldn't you agree? There's been enough time between this and Black Swan.
Yeah, I mean, you may make that argument, certainly. I mean, I think the La La Land train is going to be, moving forward. There was some speculation that Emma Stone could be the front runner.
Yeah.
And I don't completely discount that.
No, I don't either. Because she's great in it.
The race does come down between those two.
Yeah. Well, I'm firmly on board the La La Land train, and we'll talk about that. Yeah. We'll talk about that next week. Again, you mentioned what an amazing cast and some interesting stuff in this movie, and it handles, the story in a very unique, original way. And Natalie Portman, and I didn't even know that this was a thing until you talked about it on the show in Toronto. I had no idea that that Natalie Portman was starring in a Jackie Kennedy bio film. Was this movie completely under the radar all the way up until Toronto?
I don't know when it was. I mean, I didn't know about it until I saw it on the Toronto list. And when I saw it on the Toronto list, I'm like, oh, Natalie Portman's in a movie. I'm going to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see biopic and you see, 99-minute biopic about Jackie Kennedy, you kind of pause a little bit. What are they going to do in 99 minutes that I haven't seen in a lot of stale biopics in the past? But, everything that everyone expected to land at Toronto pretty much did. This was the one that came in under the radar that everyone went, oh, whoa, hey, mm-hmm. hold the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. Like I said, Portman is great, and Sarsgaard's great. And I want to mention John Carroll Lynch is in it. He plays Johnson. He's great. I love that guy. And he's had a pretty strong year, too, with this and a couple of other things and The Invitation. Which is so great in. Top-notch cast. You mentioned John Hurt. That stuff is amazing. Billy Crudup is really good in the film. It's got a great cast. It's really original. And I think it's great. I think it's a terrific movie. And Natalie Portman, I think, is probably the front runner to get that Oscar. All three of us highly, highly recommend Jackie. This was a movie that we thought was coming out 2 weeks ago, and it didn't. And then I didn't think it was coming out this week, and it did. But it's out. It's out now.
They pushed it back 2 weeks, and then they moved it back up 1 week.
I know. I was so thoroughly confused by when we were going to be able to talk about this movie.
Yeah.
but anyway, it's great, and you should see it. And Portman is astounding in it, and it's a terrific movie. It's called Jackie. So there you go. Oh, by the way, I do want to mention, for those people who couldn't make it last Tuesday out to see my screening of 1941, Eric, tell everybody how they get a chance to see 1941 on the big screen again this week.
Yes. We're doing at our Elk Grove Cinema presentation this month. We are doing 1941 on December 14th, which is actually the date that it opened back in 1979.
That's right.
So,
place on December 13th.
Yes, exactly.
It's all the way till the morning of the 14th. It does.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So. your screening was perfectly timed, and this screening is kind of perfectly timed, and Peter Sadinsky is hosting the event.
Mm-hmm.
I will be there as well, watching the movie again for the second time in less than a week, we'll have some prizes to give away as well.
Yeah.
So come and join. Matinee price is only $6.
$6 to get in to see it, and I got to tell you something, man, that the restoration is beautiful.
Oh, that print is fantastic.
Oh, my God, was that beautiful.
It looked great. Great. I mean, I saw it at the Cisco Center when they first did it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I ever saw it on the big screen. And then at the Movie Co., which is an even bigger screen, looked even more amazing.
No, really. I was amazed by it. Now, Colin, you weren't able to make it last week. Are you going to be able to go Wednesday?
Yeah.
I'm really going to try. I got to juggle something around with it, but I really want to make sure I'm going to do everything I can to not miss it.
Yeah, you should see this on the big screen, Colin.
I know.
It's pretty amazing. Okay, next week we've got Collateral Beauty. We've got La La Land. And then Rogue One is the other big one, the Star Wars story. Is that everything for next week?
I think those are all the biggies.
Yeah.
Next week, yeah.
Okay. And so we've got that to talk about and more. So, Colin, we'll let you go, man.
All righty.
And we'll see. We'll talk to you next week live in studio.
Sounds good.
All right. And, Eric, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. Eric's going to hang on. We're going to take a quick break, and we come back, and we're going to talk about the box office, the winners and the losers this week at the box office. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Monday morning, that means my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. That's coming up. We're going to talk about some bad food items that got axed from menus and weird food stories. That's coming up as well. And we've got a Blackhawks Express to play from last night's victory against Dallas. Well, now it's time to talk box office. We've reviewed the new movies, and we've talked about the nominees for the Chicago Film Critic Awards, which will be announced on Thursday. And now it's time to jump into the box office. Eric Childress writes about the box office for Movies.com, and you also appear on the TV on Thursday mornings, correct? Tell everybody about that.
Yes, a show called Business First AM every Thursday morning at 5 o'clock. Me and Angela Miles do a segment and talk about review some of the new movies coming out and sort of put it in perspective as to what the possibility of the box office are going to be.
Okay, and so we've got the box office to talk about right here, and your number one again for the third week is Moana with $18.8 million, bringing its total up to $145 million. Was this expected, or is this overperforming?
No, not really. I mean, I think the most consensus had it hitting number one again this week. I thought The Office Christmas Party might have had a chance to overtake it, and it got close. But being number one for a third straight week wasn't a surprise. And though, you know, some people might look at the number, $145 million, might seem a little low for this movie, even though, you know, it got off to a really big start over Thanksgiving. But it's actually, we're getting into a period now where the kids are going to be off school and whatnot. I know Sing is coming out, so that's going to take a little bit away from it. But it's right now it's still on pace to do about $230 million just here in the States.
Yeah. Jeez.
So it's going to be another hit for Disney.
Yeah.
Anyway, you slice it.
Yeah. Okay. And of course, you know, like, does this even – now, do you think that this is going to add to the draw of Dwayne Johnson?
Yeah, I heard some people who have kids are kind of big fans of him.
Yeah.
And I know some people who are actually either went to the movie or interested in seeing the movie because he does a voice in it. So, yeah, I think that there is great potential for that. Speaking of which, did you see the premiere of the new Fast and Furious trailer?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
it's more insane than you could possibly think. I mean, seriously, I'm at the point now where I am kind of giddily laughing at them and looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, that's where I have been.
It's beating me down, Nick.
From the get-go, man, seven movies ago. I was...
and this one's called The Fate of the Furious.
No, come on.
I swear to God.
Oh, God, I can't
wait. The Fate of the Furious.
It comes out in April, right?
Yes.
I wonder if this thing's going to be like 2.5 hours long.
God. Based on how many people are in the cast,
yeah.
When you see the people who show up in the trailer
yeah.
for this thing, it almost has to be 2.5 hours.
Yeah. All right. So it's The Fate of the Furious.
Yeah.
That's the eighth Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah, with Charlize Theron as the villain.
Oh, man. All right. I'm telling you, they should have called it The Fast and the Furiosa.
I know.
I'm telling you.
Well, in the trailer, she's not in a car. She never shows up in a car.
She's not in a car? They're not putting her Well, is she behind the wheel of a rig?
I don't. They should, but maybe they're just keeping that as a surprise. Maybe that'll be the big surprise. It's
right.
The climax of the movie. She gets into a big rig.
There you go. All right. Well, anyway, so the box office dominance of The Rock continues. I just keep thinking, I'm going back to 1999 when I would watch Raw and he would kill.
Yeah.
I never expected, you know, 15 years later, this guy to be like the biggest movie star in the world.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
He's good for him.
Good for him. Yeah. He's a lovable guy.
Right.
He's great. All right. All right, number two, Office Christmas Party, $17.5 million. That's pretty solid, right?
Yeah, better than some people had in like the $13-14 million range. So that's a pretty solid start for a comedy that, you know, not a lot of comedies, not a lot of laughs these days in the marketplace.
And it's an R-rated comedy too. So
that too.
Yeah.
You know, so you and I didn't like it, but if people like it, this could turn out to be one of those sort of comedy hits that grows. Like, I mean, Sisters last year, you know, only started with like $13.5 million and end up doing over 90.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that wasn't good either. Have you seen the trailers for this, the next R-rated extravaganza there with Bryan Cranston and
Not only that, I've seen it.
Oh, you've seen the movie already?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I don't know what to make of it. Let's go down to Manchester by the Sea, which is number 8, with 3.1 million. Now people have to understand that this is only in a few theaters.
Yeah, it's like 263 theaters or something like that. It's an incredible number for this movie. I mean, for weeks there, we were talking about Moonlight, which was, you know, it kind of slowly grew from like 4 theaters to eventually, you know, several hundred. And it's done almost 11 million. But Manchester by the Sea, they really kind of expanded this thing. I mean, relatively, I mean, it's still only 263 theaters.
Yeah.
And it's making over $3 million. That shows you that the word of mouth on this thing since Sundance has really grown this into something.
Yeah. And it's a great film, too.
It's going to be one of those, like that, Moonlight, La La Land, and probably Jackie a little bit more down the road are going to be the films that people are talking about this award season.
Yeah, no question about it. And then I just wanted to mention really quickly the disappointment that I have for the box office returns for Allied.
I know.
$35.6 million total. What was the budget on this movie?
85.
Man.
Yeah, this is one of those movies that, you know, I mean, Zemeckis has got so much goodwill in Hollywood. He's had a couple flops here and there, but he certainly had a lot more hits than that. The Walk box office wasn't his fault. I think that movie was just poorly managed by the studio.
I agree.
But that movie cost half as much as Allied did. And even with the star power, it's going to have to make its money overseas. Because right now it needs about another $185 million to break even.
Boy.
Yeah.
What a disappointment. It's a terrific movie, too, man. Your typical, very, very great, solid work from Zemeckis.
Yeah, it's good.
Great filmmaker. So, anyway, that's kind of a disappointment. Okay, Moana is number one, and obviously next week nothing is going to even come close to Rogue One, right?
No. I mean, they're already talking, somewhere estimated like, worldwide, they're talking just 280 to 350 million just next weekend alone.
Just for the weekend, yeah.
I think that they're probably, I think they're even lowballing the U.S. estimate. Was just saying between 100 and 140.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot, man.
Sure thing.
And we'll see you live in studio next week for the Rogue One.
Can't wait.
All right, take care. Eric Childress, everybody, and that's the movie reviews and the box office for this week. We'll take a break. We got the news coming up next here on 720 WGN.